Kaelin relaxed back in the seat and looked out the window. It didn't seem to take much to raise Lunetta's ire. Kaelin decided that it would be best if Lunetta were not pressed for now. Lunetta had already experimented with the control the collar afforded her, at Brogan's urging. Kaelin watched as the buildings of Tanemura went past the window and tried to imagine Richard being here, seeing the same sights. It made her feel closer to him, seeing things his eyes had seen, and eased the terrible longing in her heart. "Dear Richard, please don't come into this trap to save me. Let me die. Save the Midlands instead." Kaelin had seen a great many cities, everyone in the Midlands, and this was the equal to most. On the outskirts there were ramshackle huts, many no more than lean-tos erected against some of the older, shabby buildings and warehouses. As they moved on into the city, the buildings became more grand, and there were shops of every sort. They passed several large markets, with jumbles of people in every bright color of dress. Everywhere in the city was the constant beat of drums. It was a slow rhythm, and grating on the nerves. As Lunetta glanced around, her eyes searching out the men at drums when they became louder as they rode along, Kaelin could see that she didn't like them either. Out the window, Kaelin could see Brogan riding close to the coach, and the drums were making him jumpy too. The three of them grabbed at the handles again as the coach bounced up onto a stone bridge. The iron wheels let out a grating racket as they rolled over the stone. Through the window, Kaelin could see the palace looming overhead as they crossed the river. In an expansive courtyard of green lawns, fringed with trees near soaring sections of the palace, the coach rocked to a halt. The crimson-caped men all about sat tall in their saddles, making no move to dismount. Brogan's sour face suddenly appeared in the window.
"Get out," he growled. Kaelin started to rise. "Not you. I'm talking to Lunetta. You stay where you are until you're told to move."
He knuckled his mustache.
"Sooner or later, you're mine. Then you pay for your filthy crimes."
"The Mriswith aren't going to let their little lapdog have me," Kaelin said. "The Creator won't allow one such as you to put your filthy hands on me. You are nothing more than dirt under the Keeper's fingernails, and the Creator knows it. He hates you." Kaelin felt the collar send a searing pain into her legs, preventing her from moving, and another shard into her throat, squelching her voice. Lunetta's eyes were ablaze. But Kaelin had said what she had wanted to say. If Brogan killed her, Richard wouldn't come into this trap to rescue her. Brogan's eyes bulged and his face went as crimson as his cape. He ground his teeth. Suddenly he reached into the coach for her. Lunetta seized his hand, pretending she thought it was meant for her.
"Help me down, my lord general. My hip to be aching from the bumpy ride. The Creator to be kind to give you such strength, my brother. Heed his words."
Kaelin tried to call out, to taunt him, but her voice wouldn't come. Lunetta was preventing her from talking. Brogan seemed to come to his senses and grudgingly helped Lunetta climb down. He was about to turn back to the coach when he saw someone approaching. She waved him away with an arrogant flip of her hand. Kaelin couldn't hear what the woman said, but Brogan snatched up the reins to his horse and motioned his men to follow him. Ahern was told to get down from the driver's seat and to go with the men of the blood. He cast her a quick, sympathetic glance over his shoulder. Kaelin prayed to the good spirits that they wouldn't kill him, now that his coach had delivered its cargo. In a racket of sudden movement, the men on horseback all followed after Brogan and Lunetta. The early morning air quieted as the men moved off, and Kaelin felt the grip of the collar at her neck slacken. Again she remembered with anguish, making Richard put one of these collars around his neck, and every day she thanked the good spirits that he had finally come to understand that she had done it to save his life, to keep his gift from killing him. But the collars she and Addie wore were not to help them, as Richard's had been. These collars were no more than manacles in another form. A young woman strode up to the door and peered in. She wore a clinging red dress that left little doubt as to the perfection of her figure. The long mass of hair that framed her face was as dark as her eyes. Kaelin suddenly felt like a clod of dirt in this stunningly sensuous woman's presence. The woman's eyes took in Addie.
"A sorceress? Well, perhaps we can find a use for you."
Her knowing gaze turned to Kaelin.
"Come along."
She turned without further word and started away. Kaelin felt a hot stab of pain in her back that propelled her out of the coach, stumbling to catch her balance when she landed on the ground. She turned just in time to put a hand out for Addie before she fell. The two of them rushed to catch up with the woman before she gave them another jab of pain. Kaelin and Addie hurried along at the woman's heels, Kaelin feeling like a bumbling fool the way the collar's control made her legs twitch, shepherding her along, urging her to keep up, while the woman in the red dress strode along with the bearing of a queen. Addie was not prodded along, as was Kaelin. Kaelin ground her teeth, wishing she could strangle the haughty woman. There were other women, and a few men in robes, strolling along in the fine morning air. Seeing all the clean people was a keen reminder of the layers of road dust covering her. She hoped, though, that they wouldn't let her have a bath. Maybe Richard wouldn't recognize her under all the dirt. Maybe he wouldn't come for her. "Please, Richard, protect the Midlands. Stay there." They walked on down roofed walkways that had vine-covered lattices to the sides, holding fragrant white blossoms, and then were led through a gate in a high wall. Guards' eyes took in the sight, but they didn't make any move to challenge the woman leading them. After crossing a shady path under spreading trees, they entered a large building that looked nothing like the rat-infested dungeon Kaelin had expected. It looked more a proper guest wing for visiting dignitaries to the palace. The woman in the red dress, slowed to a halt before a carved door, sat back in a massive stone casing. She flicked the lever on the door and threw it open, entering ahead of them. The room was elegant, with heavy drapes overlooking a drop of perhaps 30 feet. There were several chairs richly upholstered in gold brocade fabric, a mahogany table and desk, and a canopied bed. The woman turned to Kaelin. "This is to be your room." She displayed a brief smile. "We want you to be comfortable. You will be our guests until we are done with you. Try to go through the shield I leave on the door and window, and you will be on your hands and knees vomiting until your ribs feel as if they are breaking. That's just for the first infraction. After the first, you will find you have no desire to attempt such a thing again. You don't want to know about the second infraction." She lifted a finger to Addie, but kept her dark eyes on Kaelin. "Cause me any trouble, and I will punish your friend here. Even if you think you have a strong stomach, I assure you, you will find otherwise. Do you understand?" Kaelin nodded, afraid she wasn't supposed to speak. "I asked a question," she said in a wickedly quiet tone. Addie crumpled to the floor with a cry. "You will answer me?" "Yes. Yes, I understand. Don't hurt her, please." When Kaelin turned to help Addie as she gasped for breath, the woman told her to leave the old woman to recover on her own. Kaelin reluctantly straightened, letting Addie come to her feet. The woman's critical gaze glided down the length of her and back up. The smirk on her face heated Kaelin's blood. "Do you know who I am?" the woman asked. "No." An eyebrow arched. "Well, well, that naughty boy. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that Richard didn't mention me to his future wife, considering..." "Considering what?" "I am Marissa. Now do you know who I am?"
"No."
She let out a soft laugh, as annoyingly elegant as the rest of her. "Oh, he's so naughty, keeping such lascivious secrets from his future wife." Kaelin wished she could keep her mouth shut, but she couldn't.
"What secrets?"
Marissa shrugged indifferently.
"When Richard was a student here, I was one of his teachers. I spent a great deal of time with him."
The smirk returned.
"Many a night we spent in each other's arms. I taught him many things. Such a strong and attentive lover. If you've ever lain with him, then you would be the beneficiary of my more tender instruction."
Marissa's soft, lilting laugh returned as she strode from the room, giving Kaelin one last smiling look before she shut the door. Kaelin stood clenching her fists so hard her nails were cutting her palms. She wanted to scream. When Richard had been taken away to the Palace of the Prophets, it had been in a collar she had made him put on. He thought it was because she didn't love him. He thought she had sent him away and never wanted to see him again. How could he resist a woman as beautiful as Marissa? He would have had no reason to. Addie gripped her shirt at the shoulder and pulled her around.
"Don't you listen to her."
Kaelin felt her eyes filling with tears.
"But Richard loves you. She'd only be tormenting you. She'd be a cruel woman and be enjoying to make you suffer."
Addie lifted a finger as she quoted an old proverb.
"Never let a beautiful woman pick your path for you when there be a man in her line of sight. Marissa has Richard in her line of sight. I have seen that look of lust before. It'd not be a lust to have your man, it'd be a lust for his blood. But,"
Addie shook the finger,
"don't you lose your faith in Richard because of her. That be what she wants. Richard loves you."
"And I will be the death of him."
With a sob of agony, Kaelin fell into Addie's arms. Chapter 46. Richard rubbed his eyes. He wished he could read faster, because the journal was becoming so engrossing. But it still took time. He had to think about many of the words, and he still had to search for the meaning for a few. But as the days passed, he was getting to the point where at times it didn't seem as if he was translating, but simply reading. Whenever he realized he was reading in Haidaharan without conscious effort, he would begin stumbling over the meaning of words again. Richard was intrigued by the intermittent references to Ulrich Rall. It seemed that this ancestor of his had devised a solution to the problem of the dreamwalkers. He was only one of many working on a way to prevent the dreamwalkers from taking people's minds, but he had been particularly insistent that he had the solution. Spellbound, Richard read how Ulrich Rall had sent word from Dahara that he had already woven this protective web over his people, and in order for the others to be protected by the same web, they had to pledge undying fidelity to him, and they too would be safe under this bond. Richard realized that this was the origin of the Daharan's bond to him. Ulrich Rall had created this spell to protect his people from the dreamwalkers, not to enslave them. Richard felt pride in his ancestor's benevolent act. He was hardly able to breathe as he read the journal, hoping against hope that they would believe Ulrich Rall, even though he knew that they hadn't. Kolo had been cautiously interested in proof, but remained dubious. He reported that most of the other wizards thought Ulrich was up to some kind of trick, insisting that the only thing Aral was interested in was ruling the world. Richard groaned with disappointment when he read how they had sent a message, refusing to swear fidelity and bind themselves to Ulrich. Annoyed by a persistent sound, Richard turned to look out the window and saw that it was black as pitch outside. He hadn't even realized the sun had set. The candle he seemingly had just lit was half gone. The annoying noise was water dripping from icicles. Spring was taking the bite out of the weather. Taking his mind off the journal brought back the pang of frantic worry about Kaelin. Every day messengers returned to give reports of nothing found. How could she have vanished? "Any messengers waiting to see me?" With a chafed expression, Kara shifted her weight. "Yes," she mocked. "There are several out there, but I told them that you were too busy sweet-talking me to be bothered right now." Richard sighed. "I'm sorry, Kara. I know you'll tell me if a messenger arrives." He shook a finger at her. "Even if I'm asleep." She smiled. "Even if you're asleep." Richard looked around the room and frowned. "What happened to Berdine?" Kara rolled her eyes. "She told you hours ago that she was going to get some sleep before her watch. You said yes, good night to her." Richard looked back to the journal. "Yes, I guess I did." He read again a section about how the wizards were becoming fearful that the Slif would bring something through that they wouldn't be able to stop. The war was a frightening mystery to Richard. Each side created things of magic, mostly creatures designed for one purpose, such as the Dreamwalkers, and the other side had to react with a counter to it, if they could. It was appalling to discover that some of these creatures were created out of people, out of wizards themselves. They were that desperate. Day by day they became more and more concerned that before the towers could be completed, the Slif, which in itself was created of their magic to allow them to move great distances to attack the enemy and turned out to be a great danger as well as a benefit, would bring something unexpected that they couldn't handle. They said that when the towers were completed, the Slif could go to sleep. Richard wondered constantly what the Slif was, and how it could go to sleep, and how they would wake it later after the war, as they said they hoped to do. The wizards decided that because of the danger of attack through the Slif, some of the more important, valuable, or more dangerous things had to be moved from the keep for protection. The last of the items deemed most in need of safekeeping had long ago been taken to this haven. And then Kolo said, "Today, one of our most coveted desires, possible only through the brilliant, tireless work of a team of near to 100, has been accomplished. The items most feared lost, should we be overrun, have been protected." A cheer went up from all in the keep when we received word today that we were successful. Some thought it would not be possible, but to the astonishment of all, it is done. The Temple of the Winds is gone. Gone? What was the Temple of the Winds, and where did it go? Kolo's journal didn't provide an explanation. Richard scratched the back of his neck as he yawned. He could hardly keep his eyes open any longer. There was so much more to read, but he needed sleep. He wanted Kaelin back so he could protect her from the Dreamwalker. He wanted to see Zed so he could tell him about the things he had learned. Richard rose and shuffled toward the door. "Going up to bed to dream about me?" Kara asked. Richard smiled. "Always do. Wake me if a messenger comes." "Yes, yes, I think you've mentioned it." Richard nodded and started for the door. Kara caught his arm. "Lord Rall,
They will find her. She will be safe. Rest well. Taharans are looking, and they will not fail.
Richard patted her shoulder as he left. I'll leave the journal here so when Berdeen wakes, she can work on it. He yawned and rubbed his eyes as he went to his room, not far down the hall. He only bothered to pull off his boots and slip the baldric over his head, placing the Sword of Truth on a chair, before he fell into the bed. Despite his worry about Caitlin, he was asleep in seconds. He was having a troubling dream about her when a loud knock woke him. He rolled over onto his back. The door burst open and there was sudden light. He could see Kara carrying a lamp. She moved to the side of his bed, lighting another lamp.
Lord Rawl, wake up! Wake up!
I'm awake, he sat up.
What is it? How long have I been asleep? Maybe 4 hours. Berdeen has been working on the book for a couple of hours and got all excited about something and wanted to wake you to help her, but I wouldn't let her.
Then why did you wake me now? Is it a messenger?
Yes, a messenger is here.
Richard almost flopped back into bed. Messengers never brought any news.
Lord Rawl, get up. The messenger has news.
Richard came awake as if a bell had rung in his head. He swung his feet over the side of the bed and pulled his boots on in one big rush.
Where is he? They're bringing him.
Just then, Ulic rushed in, helping a man he had with him. The soldier looked as if he had been riding hard for weeks. He could hardly stand on his own.
Lord Rawl, I bring a message.
Richard gestured for the young soldier to sit on the edge of the bed, but he waved off the offer, wanting to talk instead.
We found something. General Rybish told me to tell you first not to be frightened. We didn't find her body, so she must still be alive.
What did you find? Richard realized he was shaking. The man reached under the leather of his uniform and pulled something out. Richard snatched it up and let it unfold so he could see it. It was a crimson cape.
We found the site of a battle. There were dead men wearing these capes. Lots of dead men, maybe 100.
He pulled out something else and handed it over. Richard unfolded it. It was a roughly cut piece of faded blue cloth with 4 gold tassels along one edge.
Lunetta, he breathed. This is Lunetta's.
General Rybish said to tell you that there was a battle. There were many dead blood of the fold. There were trees that were blown down by blasts of fire, as if magic had been used in the battle. There were burned bodies, too. They found only one body that was not blood of the fold. He was a Daharan, a big man with only one eye, with a scar over where the other was sewn shut.
Orsk. That's Orsk. He was Kaelin's guard.
General Rybish said to tell you that there was no sign that she or anyone else with her was killed. It appears that they put up a furious fight, but then they were captured. Richard grabbed the soldier's arm. Did the trackers have any idea which direction they went? Richard was furious with himself because he hadn't gone. If he had gone, he would already be on the trail. Now it would take him weeks to catch up. General Rybish said to tell you that the trackers are pretty sure they went south.
South?
South? Richard had been sure that Brogan would flee with his prize to Nicobarisi. With that many bodies, Gratch must have fought furiously. They must have captured him, too.
They said they couldn't be sure because it happened so long ago. It snowed more and now the snow is melting, so it's hard to track. But he believes they went to the south, and his whole force is going after your queen.
South, Richard murmured.
South.
He raked his fingers back through his hair, trying to think. Brogan had fled rather than join with Richard in his cause against the Order. The Blood of the Fold had joined with the Imperial Order. The Imperial Order ruled the Old World. The Old World was to the south. General Rybish was tracking herself, going after his queen.
South.
What was it that the Mriswith in the keep had said?
The queen needs you, Skin Brother. You must help her.
They were trying to help him. His Mriswith friends were trying to help him. Richard snatched up his sword and shoved his head through the loop of leather baldric.
I have to go.
We go with you, Kara said.
Ulic nodded his agreement.
You can't go where I go. Take care of things for me.
He turned to the soldier.
Where's your horse?
He pointed.
Out that way and over in the next courtyard, but she's pretty footsore.
She only has to get me to the keep.
The keep?
Kara clutched his arm.
Why are you going to the keep?
Richard pulled his arm away. That's the only way to get to the old world in time. She started objecting, but he was already running down the hall. Others were joining in the rush to catch up with him. He could hear the jangle of armor and weapons behind, but he didn't slow. He didn't listen to Kara's pleas as he tried to think.
How was he going to do it? Was it possible? It had to be. He would do it.
Richard burst out the door, pausing for only an instant, and then tore off toward the courtyard where the soldier said he had left his horse. He stumbled to a stop when he came upon the horse in the darkness. He gave the sweaty animal a quick pat of introduction as she danced sideways, and then he vaulted up into the saddle. As he pulled the horse around by the reins, he could just hear Berdine's voice in the distance as she ran toward him.
"Lord Rawl, stop! Take off the cape!"
Richard gave the horse his heels as he saw Berdine waving Kolo's journal. He didn't have time for her.
"Lord Rawl, you must take off the Mriswith cape!"
Not likely, he thought. The Mriswith were his friends.
"Stop! Lord Rawl, listen to me!"
The horse leapt into a gallop, the black Mriswith cape billowing out behind.
"Richard, take it off!"
The weeks of tedious, patient waiting seemed to be exploding into the sudden need for desperate action. His passion to get to Caelan overwhelmed all other thought. The sound of thundering hooves drowned out Berdine's voice. The wind tore at his cape. The palace rushed by in a blur, and the night swallowed him.
"What are you doing here?"
Brogan turned to the voice. He hadn't heard the sister coming up behind them. He scowled at the older woman with long white hair tied loosely behind her back.
"What business is that of yours?"
She clasped her hands.
"Well, since this is our palace and you are a guest, that makes it our business when one of our guests goes places in our home where he has been specifically forbidden to go."
Brogan squinted with indignation.
"Do you have any idea just who you be speaking to?"
She shrugged.
"Some petty, self-important officer, I would say. One too pompous to know when he is treading on dangerous ground."
She cocked her head.
"Have I gotten it right?"
Brogan closed the distance.
"I be Tobias Brogan, Lord General of the Blood of the Fold."
"My, my,"
she mocked.
"How impressive. Now, it seems I don't recall saying, you may not visit the Mother Confessor unless you are the Lord General of the Blood of the Fold. You hold no value for us except that which we assign you. You do no task but what we assign you."
"Which you assign me. The Creator himself assigns me task."
She snorted with a laugh.
"The Creator? My, but don't you think a lot of yourself. You are a part of the Imperial Order, and you do what we tell you."
Brogan was an inch away from slicing this disrespectful woman into a thousand pieces.
"What be your name?"
he growled.
"Sister Leoma. Do you think you can remember that much in your tiny brain? You were told to remain with your fancy troops in the barracks. Now get yourself back there, and don't let me catch you in this building again, or you will cease to be of value to the Imperial Order."
Before Brogan could explode in anger, Sister Leoma turned to Lunetta.
"Good evening, my dear."
"Good evening,"
Lunetta said in a cautious voice.
"I've been meaning to have a talk with you, Lunetta. As you can see, this is a house of sorceresses. Women with the gift are greatly respected here. Your Lord General here is of little value to us, but one of your ability would be most welcome. I would like to offer you a place with us. You would be held in high esteem. You would have responsibility and respect."
She glanced down at Lunetta's outfit.
"We would certainly see to it that you were better clothed. You wouldn't have to wear those ugly rags."
Lunetta clutched her colored patches tighter and inched closer to Brogan's side.
"I be loyal to my Lord General. He be a great man."
Sister Leoma smirked.
"Yes, I'm sure he is."
"And you be wicked women,"
Lunetta said in a suddenly steady, suddenly dangerous tone.
"My mama told me so."
"Sister Leoma," Brogan said. "I will remember the name."
He tapped the trophy case at his belt.
"You can tell the keeper that I will remember your name. I never forget the name of Baneling."
A malicious smile spread across Leoma's face.
"The next time I speak with my master in the underworld, I will tell him your words."
Brogan pulled Lunetta around and headed for the door. He would be back, and the next time, he would have what he wanted.
"We need to go talk to Galtero," Brogan said. "I've had about enough of this nonsense. We've wiped out nests of banelings bigger than this one."
Lunetta touched a worried finger to her lower lip.
"But, Lord General, the Creator has told you to do as these women say. He told you that you must give the Mother Confessor to them."
Brogan took long strides through the darkness once outside.
"What did Mama tell you about these women?"
"Well, she said that they be bad.
They be banelings."
"But, Lord General, the Mother Confessor be a baneling. Why would the Creator tell you to give her to these women if they be banelings?"
Brogan turned his eyes down to her. In the faint light, he could see her looking up in confusion. His poor sister didn't have the intellect to figure it out.
"Isn't it obvious, Lunetta? The Creator has revealed himself through his treacherous ways. He be the one to create the gift. He tried to trick me. It be up to me now to purge the world of evil. Everyone with the gift must die. The Creator be a baneling!
Lunetta gasped in awe.
Mama always said you'd be the one headed for greatness.
After setting the glowing sphere on the table, Richard stood before the great, silent well in the center of the room. What was he to do? What was the Sliff, and how did he call her? He paced around the waist-high round hall, looking down into the darkness but saw nothing.
Sliff!
He called down into the bottomless hole. His own voice echoed back up. Richard paced back and forth, pulling on his hair, frantically trying to think of what to do. The tingle of a presence flushed across his flesh. He halted his pacing and looked up to see Amriswith standing near the door.
The queen needs you, skin brother. You must help her. Call the Sliff.
He rushed over to the dark, scaled creature.
I know she needs me. How do I call the Sliff?
The slit of a mouth spread in what looked to be a smile.
You are the first in 3,000 years to be born with the power to wake her. You have already broken the shield, keeping us from her. You must use your power. Call the Sliff with your gift.
My gift?
The Mriswith nodded, its beady eyes staying on Richard.
Call her with your gift.
Richard finally turned away from the Mriswith and went back to the stone wall around the great pit. He tried to remember how he had used his gift in the past. It always came on instinct. Nathan had said that that was the way it worked with him, with a war wizard. Need, through instinct. He had to let his need bring forth the gift. Richard let the need burn through him, through the calm center. He didn't try to summon the power, but he screamed with the need of it. He thrust his fists into the air, tilting his head back. He let the need fill him. He wanted nothing else. He let the unconscious restraints go. He didn't try to think of what to do. He simply demanded it be done. He needed the Sliff. He let out a silent cry of fury.
Come to me.
He loosed the power, like letting out a deep breath, demanding the task be done. Light ignited between his fists. That was it. The call. He knew it. He felt it. He understood it. He knew, too, what to do. The softly glowing mass rotated between his wrists, as lacy veins of light twisted up his arms, flowing into the pulsing force between. When he felt the power reach its peak, he cast his hands downward. With a howl, the orb of light shot away down into the blackness. As it descended, its light illuminated the stone in a ring around it. The ring of light and the glowing mass became smaller and smaller. The howl diminished in the far distance, until he could neither hear nor see what he had unleashed. Richard hung over the stone wall, looking into the bottomless abyss, but all was silent and dark. He could hear only his own panting. He stood and glanced over his shoulder. The Mriswith watched, but made no move to help. What was needed was up to Richard. He hoped it would be enough. In the stillness of the keep, in the quiet of the mountain of dead stone towering around him, there came a distant rumbling. A rumbling of life. Richard leaned back over the wall, looking down, but he saw nothing. Yet he could feel something. The stone beneath his feet quaked. Stone dust floated in the jittering air. Richard looked down in the well again and saw a reflection. The well was filling. Not filling as water fills, but something was racing up the shaft with impossible speed, roaring with a howling shriek of velocity as it came. The howl grew as the thing rushed upward. Richard flung himself back from the stone wall, scarcely fast enough. He was sure it would shoot out of the well and blast through the ceiling. Nothing moving that fast could stop in time. Yet it did. All was abruptly still. Richard sat up, propping himself up with his arms behind on the floor. A lustrous metallic hump slowly mounded above the edge of the stone wall surrounding the well. It drew up into a bulk, rising impossibly of its own accord, like water standing in the air, only it wasn't water. Its glossy surface reflected everything about it, like polished armor, distorting the images reflected off its surface as it grew and moved. It looked like living quicksilver. The lump, joined to the body of it in the well as if by a neck, continued to contort, bending into edges and planes, folds and curves. It warped into a woman's face. Richard had to remind himself to take a breath. He now understood why Kolo called the Sliff she. The face finally saw him on the floor. It looked like a smooth statue made of silver, except it moved.
Master, she said in an eerie voice that echoed around the room. Her lips hadn't moved as she spoke, but she smiled as if well pleased.
The silver face warped into curiosity.
You have called me. You wish to travel.
Richard sprang to his feet.
Yes, travel. I wish to travel.
The pleasant smile returned.
Come, then.
We will travel.
Richard brushed the stone dust from his hands onto his shirt.
How do we travel?
The silver brow drew together.
You have not traveled before.
Richard shook his head.
No, but I need to now. I need to get to the old world. Ah, I have been there often. Come, and we will travel.
Richard hesitated.
What do I do? What do you want me to do?
A hand formed up and touched the top of the wall.
Come to me, the voice said, echoing around the room. I will take you.
How long does it take? The frown returned.
Long? From here to there, that long. I am long enough. I have been there.
No, I mean hours. Days, weeks. She didn't seem to understand.
The other travelers never spoke of this.
Then it must not take very long. Kolo never mentioned it either. The journal could be frustrating at times because Kolo never explained what was, to his people, common knowledge. He hadn't been trying to teach or pass on information.
Kolo.
Richard pointed to the bones. I don't know his name. I call him Kolo. The face stretched out of the well to look over the wall.
I do not remember seeing this.
Well, he's dead. He didn't look like that before. Richard decided he better not explain who Kolo was, or she might remember and be upset. He didn't need any emotion. He needed to get to Kaelin.
I'm in a hurry. I'd appreciate it if we could hurry. Step closer, so I may determine if you can travel.
Richard moved up to the wall and stood still while the quicksilver hand came out to touch his forehead. He flinched back. It was warm. He had expected cold. He returned to the hand and let the palm glide over his forehead.
You can travel, the Slif said. You have both sides required. But you will die if you are like this.
What do you mean, like this? The quicksilver hand lowered beside him, pointing at the sword, but being careful not to get too close.
That object of magic is incompatible with life in the Slif. With that magic in me, any life also in me will be ended.
You mean I must leave it here?
If you wish to travel, you must, or you will die.
Richard was decidedly uneasy about leaving the Sword of Truth unguarded, especially after learning of the men with families who had died to make it. He pulled the baldric off over his head and stared at the scabbard in his hands. He looked over his shoulder at the Mriswith watching him. He could ask his Mriswith friend to guard the sword. No, he could ask no one to take responsibility of guarding something so dangerous and coveted. The Sword of Truth was his responsibility, not anyone else's. Richard drew the sword from the scabbard, letting the clear ring of its steel reverberate around the room, die out slowly. The rage of the magic didn't die out, though. It thundered through him. He held up the blade, looking down its length. He could feel the raised gold wire of the word truth biting into his palm. What was he to do? He needed to go to Kaelin. He needed to have the sword be safe in his absence. It came to him through the call of need. He turned the sword down, gripping the hilt in both hands. With a grunt of effort powered by magic, by the storms of fury it engendered, he thrust the sword downward. Sparks and stone chips flew as Richard drove the sword up to its hilt into a huge stone block of the floor. When he took his hands away, he could still feel the magic within him. He had to leave the sword, but he still had the magic. He was the true seeker.
I'm still linked to the sword's magic. I retain the magic within me. Will that kill me? No. Only that which generates the magic is deadly, not that which receives it.
Richard climbed up on the stone wall, suddenly beginning to worry about this. No, he had to do it. He needed to.
Skin brother.
Richard turned to the Mriswith when it called to him.
You are without a weapon. Take this.
It tossed one of its three-bladed knives up to Richard. As it arced gently through the air, Richard caught it by the handle. The side guards lay against each side of his wrist as he grasped the weapon's crossways hand grip in his fist. It felt surprisingly good in his hand, like an extension of his arm.
The Yabri will sing to you soon.
Richard nodded. Thank you. The Mriswith returned a slow smile. Richard turned to the Slif. I don't know if I can hold my breath long enough.
I told you, I am long enough to reach where we travel.
No, I mean, I need air. He made a display of inhaling and exhaling. I need to breathe.
You breathe me.
He listened to her voice echo around the room.
What? To live when you travel, you must breathe me. The first time you travel, you will be afraid. But you must do this. Those who do not die in me. Do not be afraid. I will keep you alive when you breathe me. When we reach the other place, you must then breathe me out and breathe in the air. You will be just as afraid to do that as you will be to breathe me, but you must do it or you will die.
Richard stared incredulously. Breathe this quicksilver? Could he bring himself to do such a thing? He had to get to Kaelin. She was in danger. He had to do this. He needed to do this. Richard swallowed, and then took a deep, sweet breath. All right, I'm ready to go. What do I do?
You do not do. I do.
A liquid silver arm came up and slipped around him, its warm, undulating grip compressing to grasp him. The arm lifted him off the wall and plunged him down into the silver froth. Richard had a sudden vision. He remembered Mrs. Renncliffe being pulled under the raging floodwater. Chapter 47. Verna blinked in the bright light of a lamp when the door opened. It felt as if her heart rose into her throat. It seemed too soon for Leoma to return. Already she was quivering with dread, tears welling up in her eyes, and Leoma hadn't even begun the test of pain.
"Get in here," Leoma snapped to someone.
Verna sat up and saw a small, thin woman move into the doorway.
"Why do I have to do this?" complained a familiar voice. "I don't want to clean her room. This isn't part of my job. I have to work in here with her, and the smell is near to making me blind. Now get yourself in here and clean up some of this stink, or I'll lock you in here with her just to teach you proper respect for a sister."
Grumbling, the woman waddled into the room, lugging her heavy bucket of soapy water.
"Stinks, it does," she announced. "Stinks with the likes of her."
The bucket thumped down on the floor.
"Filthy sister of the dark. Just get some soap and water around this place and be quick about it. I have work to do."
Verna looked up to see Millie staring at her.
"Millie."
Verna turned her face away, but not in time as Millie spat at her. She wiped the spittle off her cheek with the back of her hand.
"Filthy scum. To think I trusted you. To think I respected you as prelate. And all the time you serve the nameless one. You can rot in here for all I care. The place stinks with your filthy walking corpse. I hope they flail the hide off."
"Enough," Leoma said. "Just clean up, and then you can remove yourself from her loathsome presence." Millie grunted in disgust.
"Won't be soon enough for me. None of us enjoys being in the same room with an evil one such as her, but it's my duty to question her, and at least you can make it smell a little better for me." "Yes, sister, I'll do it for you then, for a true sister of the light, so you won't have to bear her stink at least."
Millie spat in Verna's direction again. Verna was near to tears, humiliated to know that Millie thought those terrible things of her. Everyone else did, too. She was no longer positive that they were untrue. Her mind was so dizzied by the tests of pain that she could no longer trust that she was thinking straight to believe in her own innocence. Perhaps it was wrong to be loyal to Richard. He was, after all, a mere man. When Millie finished, then Leoma would start again. She heard herself sob at the helplessness of her situation. When Leoma heard the sob, she smiled.
"Empty that reeking chamber pot," Leoma said.
Millie huffed in disgust.
All right, just hold your skirts on and I'll empty it."
Millie pushed the bucket of soapy water closer to Verna's palate and collected the brimming chamber pot. Holding her nose, she carried it out of the room at arm's length. After she had shuffled off down the hall, Leoma spoke.
"Notice anything different?"
Verna shook her head.
"No, sister."
Leoma lifted her eyebrows.
"The drums. They've stopped."
Verna started with the realization. They must have stopped while she was asleep.
"Do you know what that means?"
"No, sister."
"It means that the Emperor is close and will be arriving soon, maybe tomorrow. He wants results from our little experiment. Tonight, you either forsake your fidelity to Richard, or you will answer to Jigang. Your time has run out. You think on that, while Millie finishes cleaning up a bit of your stink."
Muttering curses, Millie returned with the empty chamber pot. After she put it in the far corner, she went back to scrubbing the floor. She dunked her rag in the water and slopped it on the floor, working her way toward Verna. Verna licked her cracked lips as she stared at the water. Even if the water was soapy, she wouldn't care. She wondered if she would be able to get a gulp of it down before Leoma stopped her. Probably not.
"I shouldn't have to do this,"
Millie grouched to herself, but loud enough for the other two to hear.
"It's bad enough that I now have to clean the prophet's room, now that we have another. I thought I was done with going in there to clean the room of a madman. I think it's about time a younger woman had to do the work. Strange man he is.
Prophets are all loony, they are. I don't like that Warren any more than the last one. Verna nearly burst into tears at the mention of Warren's name. She missed him so. She wondered if they were treating him well. Leoma answered her unspoken question.
Yes, he is a bit odd. But the tests with the collar are bringing him back into line. I'm seeing to that.
Verna turned her eyes away from Leoma. She was doing it to him, too. Oh, dear Warren. With a knee, Millie pushed her bucket closer as she scrubbed the floor.
Don't you be watching me. I don't like your filthy eyes on me. Gives me the shivers, it does. Like having the nameless one himself watching me.
Verna turned her eyes down. Millie tossed the rag into the bucket and dunked her hands in deep to wash it out. She looked back over her shoulder as she worked the rag in the water.
I'll be finished soon. Not soon enough for me, but soon. And you can have this vile traitor to yourself. I hope you won't be kind to her.
Leoma smiled.
She will get what she deserves.
Millie brought her hands out of the soapy water.
Good.
She jammed one wet, calloused hand against Verna's thigh.
Move your feet. How can I wash the floor when you sit there like a lump?
Verna felt something rigid against her thigh after Millie took her hand away.
That Warren is a pig, too. Keeps his room a mess. I was just there earlier today, and it stunk nearly as bad as this sty.
Verna moved her hands to each side of her legs and put them under her thighs, as if to balance herself while she lifted her feet for Millie. Her fingers found something hard and thin. At first, her dull mind couldn't decipher the feel. It came to her with a jolt of recognition. It was a dacra. Her chest constricted, her muscles stiffened. She could hardly make herself breathe. Millie suddenly spat in her face again, causing her to flinch and turn away.
Don't you be looking at an honest woman like that. Keep your eyes off me.
Verna realized Millie must have seen her eyes open wide.
I'm done, she said as she straightened her sinewy frame. Unless you want me to give her a bath, and if you do, you'd better think again. I'm not touching that evil woman.
Just get your bucket and go, Leoma said,
her impatience growing. Verna had the dacra gripped so tightly in her fist that it was making her fingers tingle. Her heart hammered so hard, she thought it might crack a rib. Millie shuffled out of the room without looking back. Leoma pushed the door closed.
This is your last chance, Verna. If you still refuse, you will be turned over to the Emperor. You will soon wish you had cooperated with me. I can promise you that much.
Come closer, Verna thought. Come closer. She felt the first wave of pain coursing up through her. She flopped back on the pallet, turning away from Leoma. Come closer.
Sit up and look at me when I speak to you.
Verna could only let out a small cry, but she stayed where she was, hoping to lure Leoma closer. She would have no chance if she lunged from this far. The woman would hobble her before she made the distance. She had to be closer.
I said, sit up.
Leoma's footsteps approached.
Dear Creator, please bring her close enough. You will look at me and tell me you renounce Richard. You must renounce him so the Emperor can enter your mind. He will know when you have quit your loyalty, so don't think to lie.
Another step.
Look at me when I speak to you.
Another step. A fist snatched her hair and jerked her head upward. She was close enough, but her arms seared with pain and she couldn't lift her hand.
Oh, dear Creator, don't let her start the test with my arms. Let her start with my legs. I need my arms.
Instead of beginning in her legs, the nerve-burning pain shot down her arms. With all her strength, Verna tried to lift the hand with the dacra. It would not move. Her fingers twitched with stabs of pain. Despite her straining, her fingers tugged open in spasms and the dacra fell out.
Please, she wept. Don't do my legs this time. I'm begging you, don't do my legs.
Leoma's fist in her hair tilted her head back, and the woman struck her across the face.
Legs, arms, it doesn't matter. You will submit.
You can't make me. You're going to fail, and Verna got no more out before the hand struck her face again. The searing pain jumped to her legs, and they flopped uncontrollably with the jolts. Verna's arms tingled, but she could at last move them. Her hand groped blindly along the pallet, frantically searching for the dacra. Her thumb touched it. She curled her fingers around the cool metal handle, pulling it up in her fist. Summoning all her strength and resolve, Verna plunged the dacra into Leoma's thigh. Leoma cried out, releasing Verna's hair.
Still, Verna panted. I have a dacra in you. Stay still.
One hand slowly lowered to comfort her leg above the dacra in her thigh muscle.
You can't possibly think this will work.
Verna swallowed, catching her breath.
Well now, I guess we are going to find out, aren't we? Seems I have nothing to lose. You do. Your life. Be careful, Verna, or you will find out just how sorry you can be for doing something like this. Take it out,
and I will pretend this didn't happen. Just take it out.
Oh, I don't think that's such wise advice, advisor.
I have control of your collar. All I have to do is block your Han. If you make me do that, it will go worse on you.
Really, Leoma? Well, I think I should tell you that on my journey of 20 years, I learned a great deal about using a Dakra. While it's true that you can block my Han through the Rada Han, there are two things you had better think on. First, while you can block my Han, you can't block it fast enough for me not to touch just the tiniest flow first. From my experience, I judged that that would be enough. If I touch my Han, you will be dead instantly. Secondly, for you to block my Han, you must link with it through the collar. That gives you the ability to manipulate it. That's how it works. Do you suppose that the act of blocking my Han by touching it would in itself power the Dakra and kill you? I'm not sure myself, but I must tell you that from my end, the handle end, I'm willing to put it to the test. What do you think? Do you want to put it to the test, Leoma? There was a long silence in the dimly lit room. Verna could feel warm blood oozing over her hand. At last, Leoma's small voice filled the quiet.
No. What do you want me to do?
Well, first of all, you are going to take this Rada Han off me. And then, since I appointed you as my advisor, we are going to have a little talk. You are going to advise me.
After I take the collar off, then you will remove the Dakra, and I will tell you what you want to know.
Verna looked up at the panicked eyes watching her. You are hardly in a position to make demands. I ended up in this room because I was too trusting. I've learned my lesson. The Dakra remains where it is until I'm finished with you. Unless you do as I say, you have no value to me alive. Do you understand that, Leoma?
Yes,
came the resigned reply. Then let's begin. Like an arrow, he shot ahead with blistering speed, yet at the same time he glided with the slow grace of a turtle beneath still waters on a moonlit night. There was no heat, no cold. His eyes beheld light and dark together in a single spectral vision, while his lungs swelled with the sweet presence of the Slif as he breathed her into his soul. It was rapture. Abruptly it ended. Sights exploded about him. Trees, rocks, stars, moon. The panorama gripped him in terror.
Breathe, she told him.
The thought horrified him.
No, breathe, she told him.
He remembered Kaelin, his need to help her, and let out the sweet breath, emptying his lungs of the rapture. With a reluctant yet needful gasp, he sucked in the alien air. Sounds rushed in around him. Insects, birds, bats, frogs, leaves in the wind, all chattering, whooping, clicking, whistling, rustling, painful in their omnipresence. A comforting arm set him up on the stone wall as the night world around him settled into a familiar presence in his mind. He saw his Mriswith friends scattered about in the dark woods beyond the stone ruins around the well. A few sat on scattered blocks, and a few stood among the remains of columns. They seemed to be at the edge of an ancient, crumbling structure.
Thank you, Slif.
We are where you wish to travel, she said,
her voice echoing out through the night air. Will you be here when I want to travel again?
If I am awake, I am always ready to travel.
When do you sleep?
When you tell me, master.
Richard nodded, not sure at all what he was nodding to. He looked out on the night as he stepped away from the Slif's well. He knew the woods, not by sight, but by their manifest feel. It was the Hagen Woods, though it had to be a place much deeper in their vast tract than he had ever ventured, because he had never seen this place of stone. By the stars he knew the direction of Tanimura. Mriswith were coming in numbers from the somber surrounding woods to the ruins. Many passed him with a,
"Welcome, skin brother."
As they passed, the Mriswith tapped their three-bladed knives to his, causing both to ring.
"May your Yabri sing soon, skin brother,"
each said as they tapped. Richard didn't know the proper response, and so said only, "Thank you." As the Mriswith slunk past him to the Slif, tapping his Yabri, the humming ring lasted longer each time, its pleasant purr warming his whole arm. As other Mriswith approached, he altered his course so that he might tap his Yabri to theirs. Richard looked to the rising moon and the position of the stars. It was early evening, with a faint glow still in the western sky. He had left Adendril in the dead of night. This couldn't be the same night. It had to be the next night. He had spent almost a full day in the Slif. Unless it was 2 days, or three, or a month, or even a year. He had no way to tell. He knew only that it was at least 1 day.
The moon was the same size. Maybe it was only a day. He paused to let another Mriswith tap his Yabri. Behind, Mriswith were entering the slough. A whole line of them stood waiting their turn. Only seconds passed before the next stepped off the wall to drop into the shimmering quicksilver. Richard stopped to feel his Yabri sending a warming purr all through him. He smiled with the singing hum, the soft song pleasant in his ears and in his bones. He felt a disturbing need that interrupted the joyful song. He stopped a Mriswith.
"Where am I needed?"
The Mriswith pointed with his Yabri.
"She will take you. She knows the way."
Richard wandered off in the direction the Mriswith had indicated. In the darkness, near a ruined wall, a figure waited. The singing of his Yabri urged him onward with need. The figure wasn't a Mriswith, but a woman. In the moonlight, he thought he recognized her.
"Good evening, Richard."
He took a step back.
"Marissa."
She smiled congenially.
"How is my student? It's been a while. I hope you are well, and your Yabri sings for you."
"Yes," he stammered. "It sings of a need."
"The queen?"
Yes, the queen. She needs me."
"Are you ready, then, to help her? To free her?"
After he nodded, she turned and led him on into the ruins. Several Mriswith joined them as they entered the broken doorways. Through vine-rimmed gaps in the walls, moonlight streamed in, but when the walls became more solid, blocking the moonlight, she lit a flame in her palm as she glided along. Richard followed her upstairs, coiling into the gloomy ruins and down halls that looked to have been undisturbed for thousands of years. The illumination from the light in her palm suddenly became inadequate as they entered a huge chamber. Marissa sent the small flame into torches to either side, bringing flickering light to the vast room. Long dead balconies covered with dust and spider webs ringed the room, looking down on a tiled pool, making up the main floor. The tiles, once white, were now dark with stains and dirt, and the murky water in the pool was laced with strings of muck. Overhead, the partly domed ceiling was open in the center, with structures rising up beyond the opening. The Mriswith slipped up beside him, standing close. Both tapped their Yabri to his. The pleasant singing resonated with the calm center within him.
"This is the place of the queen,"
one said.
"We can come to her, and when the young are born they may leave, but the queen cannot leave here."
"Why?" Richard asked. The other Mriswith stepped forward and reached out with a claw. As it came in contact with something unseen, a whole domed shield lit with a soft glow. The sparkling dome fit neatly within the one of stone, except it had no hole in the top. The Mriswith pulled its claw back, and the shield became invisible again.
"The old queen's time is passing, and she is at last dying. We have all eaten of her flesh, and a new queen emerged from the last of her young. The new queen sings to us through the Yabri, and tells us that she is rich with young. It is time for the new queen to move on and establish our new colony. The great barrier is gone, and the slough is awakened. Now you must help the queen, so we may establish new territories."
Richard nodded. "Yes, she needs to be free. I can feel her need. It fills me with the singing. Why haven't you freed her?"
"We cannot. Just as you were needed to still the towers and to wake the slough, only you can free the queen. It must be done before you hold to Yabri, and they both sing to you."
Guided by his instinct, Richard moved to the stairs at the side. He could sense that the shield was stronger at the base. It had to be breached at the top. He held the Yabri to his chest as he climbed the stone steps. He tried to imagine how wondrous Two would be. Its comforting song soothed him, but the queen's need drove him on. The Mriswith remained behind, but Marissa followed him. Richard moved as if he had made the journey before. The stairs led outside and then up spiraling steps beside the ruins of columns. The moonlight cast jagged shadows among the craggy stone, still standing among the devastation. They at last reached the top of a small circular observation tower, pillars rising to the side of it, connected overhead by the remains of an entablature decorated with gargoyles. It looked as if at one time it had circled the entire dome, connecting towers like the one atop which they stood. From the high tower, Richard could look down through the opening of the dome. The curved roof bristled with huge columns like spikes, radiating out and down in rows. Marissa, in a red dress, the only color he had ever seen her wear when she had come to give him instruction, pressed up close behind him, looking silently down into the dark dome. Richard could feel the queen in the murky pool below calling to him, urging him to free her. His Yabri sang through his bones. Casting his hand down, he let his need flow outward. He cast the other arm out, pointing the Yabri down along with the fingers of his other hand. The steel knives knelled, vibrating from the power coursing out of him. The blades of the Yabri rang, rising in pitch until the knight screamed. The sound was painful, but Richard didn't allow it to abate. He called it onward. Marissa turned away, covering her ears, as the air reverberated with the howl of the Yabri. The domed shield below quaked, glowing as its vibrations intensified. Sparkling cracks appeared and raced along its surface. With a deafening knell, the shield shattered. Pieces of it, like glowing glass, rained down toward the pool, sparking out as they fell. The Yabri went silent, and the night was once again still. A bulk below stirred, shaking itself free of the strands of weed and muck. Wings spread, testing their strength. And then, with frenetic strokes, the queen lifted into the air. With needful beats of her wings, she lifted to the edge of the dome, her claws snatching and catching at the stone for support. Partially folding her newly tested wings, she began climbing the stone of the tower upon which Richard and Marissa stood. With sure, slow, powerful pulls, she hauled her glistening bulk up the column, her claws finding purchase in the cracks, crags, and crannies in the stone. At last she stopped, clinging to the pillar beside Richard, like a clawed salamander clinging to a slimy log. In the bright light of the moon, Richard could see that she was as red as Marissa's dress. At first Richard thought he was seeing a red dragon, but upon closer scrutiny he could see the differences. Her legs and arms were more heavily muscled than a dragon's, and covered over with smaller scales more like the Mriswith's. A raised row of interlocking plates ran the length of her spine, from the end of her tail to a nest of spikes at the back of her head. Atop the head, at the base of several long, supple spines, was a raised protrusion crowned with rows of scaleless flesh that occasionally fluttered as she exhaled. The queen's head snaked about, looking, searching. Her wings unfurled, slowly sweeping the night air. She wanted something. "What do you seek?" Richard asked. Twisting her head down toward him, she huffed a breath that engulfed him with an odd aroma. It somehow made him feel her need more acutely. The aroma had meaning he could understand, saying, "I wish to go to this place." She then turned her head out to the night beyond the pillars. She blew out, emitting a long, low, vibrating rumble that seemed to shudder through the air. Richard could see her expelling air through the fleshy ribbons atop her head. They fluttered as she trumpeted, creating the sound. With the heady aroma still filling his nostrils, he looked to the sweep of night before the tower. The air shimmered, brightening as an image began to emerge before him. The queen trumpeted again, and the image brightened further. It was a scene Richard recognized. It was Adendrill, as if he were seeing it through an eerie ochre fog. Richard could see the buildings of the city, the confessor's palace, and as she trumpeted again, brightening the image floating before him in the night sky, the wizard's keep, towering above on the mountainside. Her head swung around to him, again huffing an aroma. But it was different from the first. It carried a different meaning. How do I get to this place? Richard grinned with the wonder of being able to understand her meaning through an aroma. He grinned, too, with the knowledge that he could help her. He extended his arm, and a glow shot out from it, illuminating the slough. There. She will take you. The queen flapped her wings as she sprang from the column, and once clear of the stone, spread them wide to glide down to the slough. The queen couldn't fly very well, Richard understood. She could use her wings to aid her somewhat, but she couldn't fly to Adendrill. She needed help to get there. Already, the slough was embracing the queen as she folded her wings. The quicksilver took her in, and the Red Queen was gone. Richard stood smiling with the pleasure of the Yabri singing in his hand, humming through his bones. "I'll meet you at the bottom, Richard," Marissa said. He felt her suddenly seize him by the shirt at the back of his neck, and with the power of her Han fling him over the side of the tower. By instinct, Richard reached out, just managing to snatch the lip of the dome's opening as he fell past. He swung by his fingers, his feet dangling over a drop of at least 100 feet. His Yabri clattered as it hit the stone far below. Flushed with rushing panic, he felt as if he were waking in a nightmare. The song was gone. Without the Yabri, his mind suddenly felt startlingly wide awake. He shuddered with terror at realizing the insidious seduction and what it had been doing to him. Leaning over to see him hanging there, Marissa threw a bolt of fire down at him. He swung his feet in, and the flames just missed him. She wouldn't make the same mistake twice, he knew. Richard frantically felt under the rim of the dome for something to grab. His fingers found a fluted support rib. With desperate need to get away from Marissa, he gripped it and swung down under the dome as another bolt of fire shot past to erupt in the murky pool below, throwing strings of scum up into the air. Hand over hand, propelled by fear not only of Marissa, but also of the height, he started down the rib. Marissa headed for the stairs. As he descended, the rib steepened, becoming nearly vertical as it approached the edge of the dome. Grunting with effort as he hurried, his fingers aching, Richard was overwhelmed by shame. How could he be so stupid? What was he thinking? It came to him with sickening comprehension. The Mriswith cape. He remembered Berdine running out, holding Kolo's journal, screaming at him to take off the cape. He remembered reading in the journal how not only they, but their enemies too, created things of magic that brought about the changes needed to give people certain properties, such as strength and stamina, or the power to focus a line of light into a destructive point, or the ability to see great distances, even at night. The Mriswith cape must be one of those things, used to give wizards the ability to become invisible. Kolo had mentioned how many of the weapons they'd developed had gone terribly awry. It could be, too, that the Mriswith were developed by the enemy. Dear spirits, what trouble had he caused? What had he done? He had to get the cape off his back. Berdine had been trying to warn him. Wizard's third rule, passion rules reason. He had been so passionate to get to Kaelin that he had not used his reason and listened to Berdine's warning. How was he going to stop the order now? His folly had aided them. Richard strained to hold the rib as it became nearly vertical. 10 more feet. Marissa appeared in a doorway. He saw a bolt of lightning arc across the room. He let go and dropped to the ground, wishing that he could fall faster. The loud crack of the lightning hurt his ears as it came perilously close to taking off his head. He had to get away from her. He had to run.
"I've met your bride-to-be, Richard."
Richard froze in his tracks. "Where is she?"
"Come out of there, and we'll talk about it.
I'll tell you all about how I'm going to enjoy hearing her scream."
"Where is she?"
Marissa's laughter echoed around the dome.
"Right here, my student. Right here in Tanamura."
In a fury, Richard unleashed a bolt of lightning. It lit the chamber, thundering across the room to where he had seen her last. Stone chips, trailing smoke, sailed through the air. He only dimly wondered how he had done such a thing. Need.
"Why? Why would you want to hurt her?"
"Oh, Richard, it's not her I care about hurting. It is you. Her pain will give you pain. It's that simple. She is merely a means to your blood." Richard eyed the passageways.
"Why do you want my blood?"
As soon as he had finished asking, he ducked down and headed for a passageway.
"Because you have ruined everything. You locked my master back in the underworld. I was to have my reward. I was to have immortality. I did my part, but you ruined it."
A twisting bolt of black lightning sliced a clean void through a wall right beside him. She was using subtractive magic. She was a sorceress with unimaginable power, and she could tell where he was. She could sense him. Then why was she missing?
"But worse," she said as a slender finger tapped
the gold ring through her lower lip.
"Because of you, I must serve that pig Jagang. You have no idea of the things he did to me. You have no idea of the things he makes me do. All because of you. All because of you, Richard Rall. But I will make you pay. I have sworn to bathe in your blood, and I shall."
"What about Jagang? You're going to make him angry if you kill me." Fire erupted behind him, racing him to the next column.
"Quite the contrary. Now that you have done what was required of you, you are no longer of use to the Dreamwalker. As a reward, I am being allowed to do away with you as I wish, and I have some grand wishes."
Richard realized he was not going to be able to get away from her like this. He could be behind a wall, and she would be able to sense him with her Han. He thought again about Berdine, and just as he reached up and clutched a fistful of the Mriswith cape to rip it off his back, he paused. Marissa wouldn't be able to see him with her Han if he was shrouded with the cape's magic. But the cape's magic was the force that created the Mriswith. Kaelin was a captive. Marissa said her pain would give him pain. He couldn't allow them to hurt Kaelin. He had no choice. He flung the cape around himself and vanished. Chapter 48.
"That is the last of them, as I promised."
Verna stared into the eyes of a woman she had known for 150 years. Her heart was sick. Known not well enough. There were many she had not known well enough. What does Jigang want with the Palace of the Prophets?
He has no power beyond that of an ordinary man, except his ability as a dreamwalker.
Lioma's voice trembled, but she went on.
He uses others, especially those with the gift, to accomplish what he wishes. He is going to use our knowledge to reveal the forks on the prophecies that will bring him victory, and then see to it that the correct action is taken in order to carry the world down that fork. He is a very patient man. It took him nearly 20 years to conquer the old world, all the time perfecting his ability, probing the minds of others, and gathering the information he needed. He not only intends to use the prophecies in the vaults, but he intends to make the Palace of the Prophets his home. He knows about the spell. He has stationed men here as a test to make sure that it works for those without the gift, and that there is no harmful effect. He is going to live here, and direct the conquest of the rest of the world with the help of the prophecies from this place. Once all lands fall to him, he will hold dominion over the world for hundreds upon hundreds of years, enjoying the spoils of his tyranny. To his mind, nothing so great has ever been dreamed, much less accomplished. It will be as near as a ruler can come to immortality.
What else can you tell me? Lioma wrung her hands.
Nothing. I've told you all. Let me go, Verna.
Kiss your ring finger, and beg the Creator's forgiveness.
What?
Forsake the Keeper. It's your only hope, Lioma. Lioma shook her head.
I can't do that, Verna. I won't.
Verna had no time to waste. Without further word or argument, she seized her Han. Light seemed to come from within Lioma's eyes, and she crashed to the floor, dead. Verna slipped silently down to the end of the empty hall, to Sister Simona's room. Feeling the joy of being able to manipulate her Han at will, she brought down the shield. Carefully, so as not to startle her, she knocked and then opened the door, hearing Simona scurry for the far corner.
Simona, it's Verna. Don't be afraid, dear.
Simona let out a shuddering cry.
He comes! He comes!
Verna lit a gentle glow of Han in her palm.
I know. You're not crazy, Sister Simona. He does come.
We must escape. We must get away, she cried. Oh, please, we must get away before he gets here. He comes in my dreams and taunts me. I'm so afraid.
She fell to kissing her ring finger. Verna gathered the trembling woman in her arms.
Simona, listen carefully to me. I have a way to save you from the dreamwalker. I can make you safe. We can get away.
The woman stilled, blinking up at Verna.
You believe me?
Yes, I know you're telling the truth, but you must believe me, too, when I tell you the truth that I know a magic that will protect you from the dreamwalker.
Simona wiped the tears from her filthy cheek.
Is it truly possible? How can it be done?
You remember Richard, the young man I brought back?
Simona nodded with a smile as she cuddled in Verna's arms.
Who could forget Richard? Trouble and wonder in one package.
Listen now. Besides the gift, Richard has a magic which was passed down from his ancestors who fought the original dreamwalkers. It's a magic that protects him, too, from the dreamwalkers. It also protects anyone who swears fidelity to him, who is loyal to him in every way. That was the reason the spell was originally cast, to fight the dreamwalkers.
Her eyes widened.
That can't be possible. Mere loyalty conferring magic?
Lioma has had me locked in a room down the hall. She put a collar around my neck and used the test of pain to try to break my will and make me renounce Richard. She told me that the dreamwalker wanted to come to me in my dreams, like he does you. But my fidelity to Richard prevented it. It works, Simona. I don't know how, but it does. I'm protected from the dreamwalker. You can be, too.
Sister Simona wiped wisps of gray hair back from her face.
Verna, I'm not crazy. I want this collar off my neck. I want to escape the dreamwalker. We must escape. What would you have me do?
Verna gripped the small woman tighter. Will you help us? Will you help the rest of the Sisters of the Light escape, too? Simona put her cracked lips to her ring finger.
On my oath to the Creator.
Then swear an oath to Richard, too. You must be bonded to him.
Simona pushed away and knelt with her forehead to the floor.
I swear fidelity to Richard. I swear my life to him on my hope to be sheltered by the Creator in the next world.
Verna urged Simona to sit up. She put her hands to the side of the Radahan, letting her Han flow into it, join with it, the room droning with the effort. The collar snapped and fell away. Simona let out a joyful cry as she hugged Verna. Verna embraced her tightly. She knew the joy of having the Radahan off her neck.
Simona,
We must be going. We have much work to do and not much time. I need your help. Simona wiped away her tears.
I'm ready. Thank you, prelate.
At the door with the bolt held on with the intricate web, Verna and Simona worked their Han together. The web had been set by three sisters, and though Verna had that much power, it would still be a challenge to undo it. With Simona's added help, the web slipped away easily. The two guards outside the door started in surprise when they saw the filthy prisoners. Pikes came down. Verna recognized one of the guards. Walsh, you know me. Now raise that pike.
I know you've been convicted of being a sister of the dark.
I know you don't believe that. The point was menacingly close to her face.
What makes you think so?
Because if it were true, I would have simply killed you in order to escape. He was silent for a moment as he considered.
Keep talking.
We are at war. The Emperor wishes to put the world under his fist. He uses the true sisters of the dark, like Leoma and the new prelate Ulyssia. You know them and you know me. Who do you believe?
Well, I'm not so sure.
Then let me put it in terms that make it clear. You remember Richard?
Of course, he's a friend.
Richard is at war with the Imperial Order. The time is upon you to choose sides. You must decide your loyalty right now, right here. Richard or the Order? His lips pressed together as he fought a mental battle. Finally, the butt of his pike thumped to the floor.
Richard!
The other guard's eyes shifted between Walsh and Verna. His pike suddenly thrust forward with the cry,
"The Order!"
Verna already had a firm grip on her Han. Before the blade touched her, the man was blown back with such force that when he hit the wall, his head split open. He toppled to the floor, dead.
I guess I chose right, Walsh said.
You did indeed. We must get the true Sisters of the Light and the loyal young wizards, and we must be away from here at once. There isn't a moment to waste.
Let's go, Walsh said, holding his pike out, pointing the way.
Outside in the warm night air, a thin figure sat on a bench nearby. When she recognized them, she sprang up.
Prelate,
she whispered with tearful joy. Verna hugged Millie so tight the old woman squeaked for release.
Oh, prelate, forgive the hateful things I said. I didn't mean a word of it, I swear.
Verna, nearly in tears, squeezed the woman again, and then kissed her forehead a dozen times.
Oh, Millie, thank you. You are the Creator's best work. I will never forget what you've done for me, for the Sisters of the Light.
Millie, we must escape. The Emperor is going to take the palace. Will you come with us, please? So you will be safe. Millie shrugged.
Me? An old woman? On the run from cutthroat sisters of the dark and magic monsters?
Yes. Please? Millie grinned in the moonlight.
Sounds more fun than scrubbing floors and emptying chamber pots.
All right. All of you listen, then. A tall shadow stepped out from behind the corner of the building. Everyone fell still and silent as the figure approached.
Well, Verna. It looks as if you found your way out. I thought you might.
She stepped close where they could see her. It was Sister Philippa, Verna's other advisor. She kissed her ring finger. Philippa's narrow mouth spread in a smile.
Thank the Creator. Welcome back, prelate.
Philippa, we must get the sisters away tonight, before Jigang gets here, or we will be captured and used.
What are we to do, prelate? Sister Philippa asked.
All of you, listen carefully now. We must hurry. And we must be more than careful. If we are caught, we will all be in collars. Richard was winded from his run from the Hagen Woods, so he slowed to a trot to catch his breath. He saw his sisters prowling the grounds of the palace, but they didn't see him. Though he was shrouded in the Mriswith cape, he couldn't search the entire palace. It would take days. He had to find out where Kalin, Zed, and Gratch were being held, so he could get back to Adendril. Zed would know what to do. Zed would probably furiously upbraid him for his stupidity, but Richard deserved it. His stomach was in a knot, thinking about the trouble he had caused. He could not even credit his wits for his foolhardy actions not ending in his being killed. How many lives had he put in jeopardy by his reckless actions? Kalin was probably going to be more than furious with him, and why not? Richard shuddered to think why the Mriswith went to Adendril. He felt a pang of dread for his friends there. Maybe the Mriswith only wanted to establish a new home like the Hagen Woods here, and would stay there and keep to themselves. An inner voice laughed at his wishful thinking. He had to get back there. Stop thinking about the problem, he reprimanded himself. Think about the solution. He would get his friends out of here first, and then he would worry about the rest. It was puzzling that Kalin, Zed, and Gratch would be held at the palace, but he didn't doubt what Marissa had told him. She had thought she had him, and so would have had no reason to lie. He couldn't understand why the Sisters of the Dark would hide their catch in a place that could be a danger to them. Richard halted. A small group of people was crossing the lawn in the moonlight. He couldn't see who they were and was about to go find out, but decided that his first thought was the correct one. Go see Anne. The prelate would be able to help him. Other than Prelate Annalena and Sister Verna, he didn't know which of the sisters he could trust. He waited until the people moved off down a covered corridor before he started out again. When he had left the palace months ago, he knew there could still be Sisters of the Dark among the sorceresses here, and they must be the ones who had hidden Kaelin away, but he didn't know who they were. He could look for Verna, but he didn't know where she would be. He did know where to find the prelate, though, so that was where he would start. If he had to, he would tear the Palace of the Prophets down, stone by stone, to find Kaelin and his friends, but he was wary of violating the wizard's third rule again, and decided that this time he would start out at least with reason instead of passion. Dear spirits, where did one end and the other begin? At the outer gate to the prelate's compound, Kevin Andelmere was standing guard. Richard knew Kevin and was reasonably sure he could be trusted. Reasonably sure wasn't good enough. So Richard kept the Mriswith cape closed around himself and slipped past Kevin into the inner compound. In the distance, Richard could hear the raucous laughter of several men coming up a walkway, but they were a goodly distance away. Richard knew the prelate's former administrators. One had been killed when the other, Sister Eulysia, had attacked the prelate. After the attack, Sister Eulysia and five other Sisters of the Dark had fled aboard the ship, the Lady Sepha. The desks outside the prelate's office were empty now. No one was around out in the hall or the outer office, and the door to the prelate's office was open, so Richard let the Mriswith cape fall open as he relaxed his concentration. He wanted Anne to recognize him. The moonlight coming through the double doors in the rear of the dark room silhouetted her enough for Richard to tell that she was sitting in her chair at the table. He could see in the faint light that her head was tilted down. She must be napping. "Prelate," he said gently, so as not to startle her awake. She stirred, her head coming up a bit and her hand lifting. "I need to talk with you, Prelate. It's Richard, Richard Rawl." A glow lit in her upturned palm. Sister Eulysia smiled up at him. "Come to talk, have you? How very interesting. Well, a talk would be nice." As her wicked grin widened, Richard took a step back, his hand going for the hilt of his sword. He had no sword. He heard the door slam shut behind him. He spun and saw four of his teachers, Sisters Toby, Cecilia, Armina, and Marissa. He saw as they closed the distance that each wore a ring in her lower lip. Only Nikki was missing. They all grinned like hungry children staring at a candy reward at the end of a 3-day fast. Richard felt his need ignite within. "Before you do anything foolish, Richard, you had better listen first, or you will die where you stand." He paused and looked to Marissa. "How did you beat me back here?" She arched an eyebrow over a dark, malevolent eye.
"I returned on my horse."
Richard turned back to Eulysia. "This was all planned, wasn't it? You did this to trap me."
"Oh, yes, my boy. And you have done your part splendidly."
He pointed back at Marissa while he spoke to Eulysia. "How did you know I wouldn't be killed when she threw me off that tower?" Eulysia's smile vanished as she glared up at Marissa. Richard realized by seeing that look that Marissa had been acting outside of instructions. Eulysia brought her gaze back to Richard.
"The point is, you are here. Now, I want you to calm down or someone could get hurt. You may have been born with both sides of the gift, but we have use of both magics, too. Even if you manage to kill one or two of us, there is no way you will get us all, and then Kaelin will die."
"Kaelin." Richard glared down at her. "I'm listening." Eulysia folded her hands.
"You see, Richard, you have a problem. Fortunately for you, we also have a problem."
"What sort of problem?" Her eyes hardened with distant menace.
"Jagang."
The others moved around the table to stand beside Eulysia. None of them were smiling anymore. The loathing in their eyes at the name Jagang, even the kindly seeming Toby and Cecilia, looked as if it could burn stone.
"You see, Richard, it's almost time for bed."
Richard frowned.
"What?" "You don't have any visits from Emperor Jagang in your dreams. We do. He is becoming a problem to us."
Richard could feel the control around her voice. This woman wanted something more than life itself.